every single worldview question that is asked, whether it's about origin, identity, meaning, morality, or destiny, or knowledge, is answered by your view of God.
Welcome to the Mama Bear Apologetics Podcast. I'm Hillary.
And I'm Amy.
We are just two gals who are spiritually armed, highly caffeinated,
and just sassy enough to make bad ideas cry. Mama Bear is a ministry dedicated to helping you raise children who think critically, love biblically, and stand firm in the faith using scripture, reason, and reality.
Because remember, Mama Bears, this might not affect your faith,
but it might affect your children's. Hey everyone, welcome to another Mama Bear Apologetics Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you raise children who think critically, love biblically, and stand firm in the faith using scripture, reason, and reality. Well, joining me today is the ever amazing Trisha Scribner, our resident Nana Bear, as we discuss one of my favorite topics. I was kind of joking with Trisha before we got started that whenever I attend a conference, if someone is doing a session on this topic, like I am there front and center with my notes, absolutely love it. Today, we are going to look at evidence for God through cosmology and the logic behind the beginning of the universe. Now, if you have been tracking with our Mama Bear podcast, you'll see that we have been approaching these discussions from the classical apologetics purview, which starts by focusing in on the importance of logic and faith, showing how truth exists and is knowable. We analyzed self-refuting statements in a previous podcast, so definitely check those out. And we've even evaluated what a worldview is and compared it to the top three worldviews going on today. So today we're going to shift focus a little bit as we've addressed these issues. Today we are going to see how these work together to show that God exists and what God is like.
This is an amazing turn of events. We feel like that we've gone through a lot of foundational material to get to this point where we get to the real meat of the issue, because your beliefs about God form your most foundational view of reality. In fact, like we've talked about, every single worldview question that is asked, whether it's about origin, identity, meaning, morality, or destiny, or knowledge, is answered by your view of God. It's the starting place for all other beliefs about ultimate reality. So I'm excited that we've arrived at this place today, and I bet our listeners are too.
Absolutely. And you know, that's why it's been so fun to actually start from this systematic approach and work from truth through establishing the existence of a theistic God, rather than just, you know, jumping ahead to the possibility of miracles, which is another exciting topic that we're going to get to. But for now, we're just kind of going to laser in on sort of that universal origins and show how God, we can get know him through looking at the arguments for the existence of this universe. But I think for maybe those who have just jumped in a little bit, Trisha, you know, what are, maybe if we could recap a little bit with regards to different worldviews.
All right. Well, we said every worldview speaks to the issue of whether God exists and what kind of God exists. So we identified the three main worldviews as theism, atheism, and pantheism. And then there are plenty of offshoots of these, but that gives us a little bit of a working context for what we mean by worldview and how each of them views God. So each of them has a different core belief about God. Christianity would say that the kind of God exists is transcendent beyond the universe. He's the personal creator of the universe. Because he transcends the universe, he's not constrained by any space, time, matter, or any law of physics, anything that governs the physical universe. He's transcended above it. At the same time, the theistic God is also immanent, so he can be active in the universe, immanent, while at the same time being transcendent apart from the universe. That makes him different than the pantheistic God, who just is the universe, like the blade of grass is the universe. Nor is the theistic God the same as the panentheistic God, an offshoot of pantheism, in which everything is, God is in everything, animates everything like a hand in a glove. So the panentheistic God is finite in that sense, but he's also infinite. And this is illogical, but according to that view, he has two poles of being, one finite, one infinite. And this is a common belief, for instance, among progressive Christians, then the final view being atheism, there is no God.
Right. Yeah. Which our previous podcast, we unpack each of those. So definitely you'll want to check that out. And, you know, all of this talk with regards to the theistic God, this also rules out multiple gods of, say, polytheism, which is common in worldviews like Hinduism and even henotheism, in which there are many gods, but one head god. So we have God, who is the ultimate being, who is separate from the universe, which he created, and transcendent above it. At the same time, he's active in the universe, and we can know this through an amazing cause and effect argument that shows the logic of the beginning.
Yes. Now, we in this series are going to do a session, three different episodes on the three different arguments for the existence of this theistic God. And when we say argument, we're not talking about argumentative. What we mean is a line of evidence like a lawyer would present. And remember, we talked about deductive and inductive reasoning. We're going to use some of those principles as we pursue understanding how we can reasonably know that God exists, even before we get to the Bible. And this is exactly what Romans chapter 1 says. It says that we can know that God exists because of the creation and because in Romans 2 of our conscience. So let's look at the evidence from creation, and it's specifically called the cosmological argument, which in everyday terms we could say is cause and effect. That's how I would teach it to my seniors. But that way, if you hear the word the cosmological argument for God, or even this word kalam argument for God, you'll know we're talking about the cause and effect argument. And it goes like this. It's deductive in form, so that if premises 1 and 2 are true and the conclusion follows, then it's definitely true. So everything with the beginning has a cause, premise number one. The universe had a beginning, premise number two. The conclusion that follows from these two premises is therefore the universe had a cause. Let me say it again. Everything with a beginning has a cause. The universe had a beginning, and then therefore the universe had a cause. So if the premise one and two are true and the conclusion follows from it, it is also true. But we have to look at these premises and ask some questions about them.
Yeah, we do. And you know, one thing that I love about this argument, Tricia, is that it's very simple and easy to remember, which is great, especially if you have kids, because this is something quick and easy for them to remember. And I remember this became really practical. I had shared it with my sons when they were little. We just had a little discussion on it. And then he ended up busting it out on the playground one day because they'd gone through science class. And on the playground, you know, he was just sharing his, well, I'm not quite sure if I am buying into the evolutionary explanation for the origins of life and the universe and that sort of thing. And he got challenged by a kid on the playground. And just because of the conversations that we had had, he bust out the Kalam cosmological argument right there, and which was great. I will confess, though, his approach was a little rough, like third grade boy, right? Testosterone is surging. You know, we can work with passion. But, you know, I wanted to offer that as a little bit of an encouragement, because sometimes we think, oh, my gosh, apologetics is so intimidating. Yeah. It's so highbrow. And it is so practical that even kids can learn these arguments. And man, they can throw them down on the playground at school. And one thing that I love about the deductive nature with regards to the Kalam cosmological argument is how the premises build upon themselves to affirm a scientifically proven conclusion. Because depending on who you're talking to, if you appeal to scripture first, they will completely write you off. And so the Kalam cosmological argument is so wonderful because, again, we have that backing from the scientific perspective. So let's kind of dive into these premises. Let's unpack each one.
Okay. And I love that Romans 1 tells us this is the case. It affirms that using the effects helps us to reason back to the cause. And so the Bible affirms that creation provides this evidence, and that's exciting. The first premise says that everything with the beginning has a cause. And we might be sort of tempted to say, well, duh, but let's make sure we understand what we're saying. We're not saying everything has a cause, because the next question is, what caused God?
Who created God?
And we can deal with that. But first, let's deal with everything with the beginning. Or we could say everything that begins to exist has a cause. And we'll talk about what kinds of things begin to exist and what makes them contingent where they could possibly not exist. We'll get to that. But everything with the beginning has a cause is the foundational principle of the scientific endeavor. It's called the law of causality. And we couldn't even do science if this weren't true. It seems pretty obvious because otherwise we would see things like Porsches, elephants, and hippos popping into existence in our living room. And we'd like that for maybe
the Porsches, yeah, not the Porsches, hippos.
But not for the hippos, yeah. So science is based on it. And in fact, we can't think of anything in the universe that isn't caused by something that's already existing. And this is the other important facet of this. Whatever is the cause of the thing that exists, that is the effect, must already be in existence. Why?
Yeah.
Because otherwise nothing would be there and nothing can't cause something. And nothing can cause, there's not anything in the universe that can cause itself. Therefore, whatever is caused, and everything in the universe is caused because everything is an effect of something else, must be caused by something that already has existence or something that already is being. So everything with the beginning must have a cause. And in fact, once we name everything in the universe and it must have a beginning, then the entire universe as a whole must have a beginning, and therefore it must have a cause.
Yeah. And it requires an explanation for how it came about. And one thing that's so funny that you mentioned, okay, it can't come out of nothing, is because that's the exact word that I have heard again and again from scientists to suggest where the universe came from. They keep appealing to this nothing, but nothing isn't exactly nothing as what we'd understand it to be. Like I remember in seminary, there was a clip that we were shown to where it was like a room full of cosmologists or astrophysicists. They're all sitting at this desk. And there's one of them who was insisting that the universe came from nothing, but it was something, but that something was nothing. And I remember thinking, man, they are doing a lot of tap dancing just to avoid saying God. And, but yet that's when they say nothing, they're not actually meaning a literal absence of everything.
Exactly. They may refer to a quantum energy field, but a quantum energy field is not nothing. Physicist Lawrence Krauss actually made this move and said that the universe came from nothing and it always will. But he fools he pulls a fast one on the notion of nothing, as you say, redefining it. Now, we need to remember this word that I'm about to reintroduce called equivocation. It's what is called by Hillary linguistic theft in the Mama Bear book, the first one, but it's redefining a word. So using it one way in one part of a sentence or argument and then redefining it later. So to say that the universe came from nothing means it came from no thing, nothing, no physical laws that are that accompany space-time matter. So he redefines nothing as a quantum energy field, which is not nothing. So he uses the word in a non-traditional sense, but he doesn't tell us that he's redefined the word. So the way that we get at this is not to become physicists. We might be a physicist, but most of us are not. So can we discuss this with someone who's a physicist? Yes, by saying, what do you mean when you use the word nothing? And you're going to find his definition is not the standard definition. Now, another thing that we need to remember, another approach when we're dealing with folks who make this argument, is to cite people who are also atheists who disagree with this use of the word nothing. And one of the physicists who is a contemporary of Lawrence Krauss's is another atheist physicist named David Albert, and he calls him on it and says, this is not the meaning of nothing. He plays fast with the meaning of nothing. So whenever we're talking to an atheist, we don't have to just cite a Christian physicist. We can cite an atheist physicist who also disagrees with Lawrence Krauss's definition of nothing. And this makes it not merely a Christian objection, but an objection raised by someone who is also an atheist and recognizes Krauss's misuse of the word.
Confession time, mamas. When I am in my house chasing after my toddler, I am usually wearing a pair of joggers. I love them. I mean, they're comfortable and they're adaptable for everyday life, which is why I wanted to introduce you to our sponsor, Cozy Earth. Cozy Earth makes brushed bamboo joggers that are made from viscose from bamboo. They have a tapered fit with a relaxed waistband and just enough structure to feel intentional, which if you are a busy mom, that is exactly what you're looking for. It's perfect for morning coffee, afternoon errands, or evenings winding down. These joggers, they're gonna go with your day wherever it takes you. Now, what's amazing about this is that they come with a 10-year warranty. So this spring, give yourself the kind of comfort that lives with you all day, not just the moments you get home. Head over to CozyEarth.com and use our code MAMABEAR, that's M-A-M-A-BEAR, for an exclusive 20% off. And if you see the post-purchase survey, mention that you happen to hear about Cozy Earth right here on Mama Bear Apologetics. That's Cozy Earth. Comfort lives here.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I love that. And I mean, it's so important, mamas, to remember to define terms, to recognize those equivocations that are coming in, those twisted definitions, because as we just saw with that sentence alone, there were two different definitions being used at the exact same time. So it's, oh, wait, we need to distinguish our terms because meanings matter, words matter, and the meaning of those words has to tie back to reality. So, I mean, as we've shown that it's true for everything with a beginning, that it has to have a cause. So now the second premise says that the universe had a beginning. Now, this isn't a philosophical statement. It is a scientific observation that's based on observable evidence. And, you know, there's a great catchy little acronym that Frank Turek and Norman Geisler came up with regards to the evidence for the beginning of the universe, and they called it SURGE. So SURGE stands for, you got the S, that means second law of thermodynamics. Then you got the U, universe is expanding. R, radiation from the Big Bang. We got G, that means great galaxy siege, which basically they're meaning that there's variations in radiation that can come together to make other galaxies. And E, Einstein's theory of general relativity. Now, we may address all of these at another time, but just for the sake of your time, we're only going to focus on the first three. So, Tricia, why don't you kick us off the first one, the second law of thermodynamics?
Yes. Now, as we get into this, let's notice what we're building on. We're building on our episode where we talked about inductive and deductive reasoning. So deductive reasoning is how we set up the argument for the existence of God. Everything with a beginning has a cause. The universe has a beginning. Therefore, the universe has a cause. That's deductive in that if the premises are true and the conclusion follows, it's necessarily valid and true also. But inductive reasoning is basically the scientific method. It's where we look at a lot of individual circumstances and then we generalize to a general principle. And these can only be true, certain to a certain level of probability. And so we usually say beyond a reasonable doubt. And we mean that not in the legal sense, but in the everyday sense, what a reasonable person would find as sufficient evidence. So these three lines of evidence, as you mentioned, that we want to talk about. The first one is the second law of thermodynamics. So this is a scientific evidence that you can talk to your kids about. These laws are very complex, beyond my knowledge and intelligence to fully grasp. But another word for the second law of thermodynamics is the law of entropy. It just means that disorder is always increasing in the universe. We see this, you know, when you hold pickup sticks, even if you have the colors all in the right place, you drop them, what does it do? Do all the yellows fall toward the yellows, the reds toward the reds, the blues toward the blues? No, it moves toward disorder. And another way to say that is that the whole universe is running out of usable energy. Now, you may say to me, well, wait a minute, Tricia. Energy, matter can neither be created nor destroyed. So
that's right.
What do you mean by that? Well, all I'm saying is that the usable energy is running out. So that, for instance, when you put gas in your car, you can't get those fumes back out and put them back in. Don't we wish that we could do that? So there
that
must
be so convenient.
Finite, a finite or limited amount of total energy because we're running out of usable energy. It's being converted to an unusable form. So The universe is like a flashlight, say. If you've ever had a flashlight with a dying battery, you usually only find it out in the middle of a dark storm when the electricity's gone out, that the battery is dying. And so the universe is like that flashlight. And if the universe were eternal, it would have run out of usable energy a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Now, a great way just to talk to our kids in general about this is in everyday conversation when you have a hot cup of water and you can see the steam coming off of it. Take that hot cup of water that they can see the steam or feel the cup mm-hmm. is warm and say, this cup of water has been sitting here for 2 days. Ask if they think that your statement is true or false and why. The truth is that the hot water would have cooled off. It wouldn't be steaming if it had been sitting there for 2 days. I used to even do this with my seniors in high school. As I would just have them imagine it's steaming and they walked into the room and I said, it's been sitting there for 2 days. Would they believe me? None of them would. And the reason why is it would have cooled off by now. The same with the universe. It's running out of usable energy and is cooling off like the hot water in the cup, but there's still heat in it. It will completely cool down one day, but not yet. And therefore, because it's running out of usable energy, it must have a beginning.
Oh, I love that. And I could already hear somebody typing in the comment section being like, well, if that coffee was in a Stanley Cup mug, it would still be just as hot 2 days later. We are not including Stanley mugs in this. I love that. I love that example too. It's so practical. Heat up the drink there and say, okay, it's been sitting here for 2 days. That's great. Kids will know. Yeah. And they can test that too. It's like, okay, let's come back in 15 minutes. Let's come back in 20 minutes and then see the shift in the temperature. Yeah. That's a really fun way to do that. Now, the next one we want to take a look at, the next bit of evidence stands for U, and that is the universe is expanding. Yes. This was actually discovered by Edwin Hubble when he noticed the red shift. So Hubble had discovered that galaxies were moving far away from us at an ever-increasing speed. And so when they do that, this shifts, the colors then shift to the red end of the color spectrum, which was, as Trisha is going to share in just a minute, which was a bit of a disappointment for Albert Einstein. So with that being said, if we were to rewind the acceleration of the galaxies away from us, then we'd be able to sort of like rewind those tapes, like all the millennials. You remember how you wind those cassette tapes with the pencils? If we could do that to the universe, then we would see it would come back to and collapse into that point of singularity. So, which you've got a really fun example with regards to a balloon and that, which we'll get to in just a second. But you also notice there's something similar with regards to the Doppler effect.
Yeah. The Doppler effect is like, whenever you're standing, say, out front of your house door and you hear a police siren go by or an ambulance and it's very, very loud, and then you'll notice that the sound begins to dissipate. As soon as it passes, it changes pitch and gets lower and quieter as it moves away. Similarly, there are similar changes in what we see when the galaxies get further away. So they are not just expanding into space. Space itself is actually expanding. And what Hubble noticed, and Einstein could not avoid when he looked through the Hubble telescope, is that when that happened, as the galaxies moved further away, the ones furthest away moved in terms of color, shifted to the red color end of the spectrum. So let's show an 8-year-old how it might look. So I have my 8-year-old draw dots all over the balloon. Okay. And so the universe is expanding. And what we're going to notice is something changes in the distance of the relationship between the dots. Okay. And the first thing that they will notice is that the dots are further apart. And so if you let the air out, that would be like rewinding the universe. What does it do? It goes back to nothing. This expansion of the universe, the galaxies, and the space in between them tell us that the universe had a beginning. You had another example that you said was shared with you. I think that it's cool too.
Yeah. So we were to show how this expanding, the example that was given was that it's a bit like if you were to make a loaf of bread that was like one of those raisin cinnamon swirl loaves,
yeah,
to where you would have at the beginning where it's still all doughy, the raisins would be in there one spot. But then of course, as the bread rises and bakes, the raisins grow further and further apart from one another. So that's what we see with regards to the universe. And the implication then is if we were to go back to the very beginning, they all come from that point of singularity, which was a huge bummer for Albert Einstein because he was operating on the perception that the universe was eternal in a bit of a way to avoid acknowledging the potential existence of God. And yet when he was able, in fact, there's a great picture of him peering through the telescope from with Edwin Hubble standing nearby, then he had to concede, oh man, maybe I got something wrong there.
Yes. Well, and the last one is general relativity. Einstein also developed this theory of general relativity. While we won't go into this very complex theory, one of the implications of this theory is that space, time, and matter are what we call correlative. In other words, they came into existence all at the same time, simultaneously, together. Yeah. So one doesn't exist without the other. So even though Einstein didn't want the universe to have a beginning, his theory revealed it did have a beginning. So he didn't have an option for this. So for kids, when we talk about Einstein's wish that the universe was eternal, we can remind them, even brilliant people make errors, especially when their presuppositions have not been thoroughly evaluated. What was his presupposition? Mm-hmm. There is no God. The universe is eternal, therefore it doesn't need a cause. But the evidence didn't support his conclusion.
Wow.
And you tell us about, there's a blunder he made actually that is well reported.
That's right.
Because of his desire to make the universe eternal using his mathematical skills that got him into trouble.
Yeah. So when we look at these three, we've got like the second law of thermodynamics, we've got the expanding universe, there we go, and then we've got general relativity. What's amazing is that, and there's more, of course, which hopefully we'll be able to get to at a later time, but what they convey is that the universe had a cause, and based on that evidence, like the redshift and expanding galaxies, we can reasonably conclude that the best evidence shows that the universe did in fact have a beginning. Now, where you'll hear folks push back is they say that, well, just because the universe had a cause doesn't necessarily mean that cause was the God of Christianity. Right. Now, we're not going to unpack it all within this podcast. There's going to be a few others that we're going to build off of. But a few points that we just want to make here is there are evidence that point to important truths that we can discern by examining this evidence that point us to the Creator being the God of Christianity. And Trisha, you have the first one with regards to the universe.
In terms of the cause being personal or impersonal, some people will say, well, a force could have caused it. But if the cause produced rational beings, minds with will, reasoning kinds of beings, the cause itself cannot be less than that. And a force intellectually is less than it, and a force lacks a will. Therefore, whatever caused the universe must be an intellect, must have the capacity of will to choose. Because remember, there was nothing and then something. So there was a choice of will involved here. So since the intelligence is a greater capacity than non-intelligence, and a will to choose is greater than a thing without a will to choose, whatever caused the beings with rational intellect and will to choose must be greater than any force or any other existing thing without intellect. So the cause of the universe must be a personal being, must be an intellect with a will.
Yeah. And the second thing that it points out to with this evidence that we've just laid out points to is that this being who created the universe had to be outside of the universe itself. So the universe consists of space, time, matter, which all had a beginning. So nothing in the universe could cause the universe to exist. As Trisha, I love her example that she uses, as a brick in a wall could create a house. Therefore, whatever causes the universe also has to be spaceless timeless, immaterial, and then, like you just said, Tricia, creative, powerful, all of these amazing characteristics that goes into a divine creator, that perfect description of what he may be. And we know that physical being is extended in space with dimensions. So therefore, whatever caused the universe cannot be bound by dimensions. So it cannot have a height, a depth, a width. And so this is why it's so important for us. And one of the great examples that we can actually use with our kids, with understanding that this creative entity is outside of the creation itself, one of the easiest things to do is just use the game of Minecraft. Mm-hmm. So when my kids were little, one of the things they loved to do was hop into Minecraft and they would go into creator mode, which is perhaps the very perfect name for this setting. Because what it was, is it was them being able to enter into this blank canvas situation. And they were able to create from scratch everything from, you know, houses and put the trees where they needed to be. It was amazing. And we were able to use just that example of saying, okay, so this is a bit of a way that you can understand the nature of God with relation to creation. Because here you are an outside force. You're not bound by the laws of time within that Minecraft game. Mm-hmm. You're not bound by time. You don't have the same material makeup as, you know, obviously it's a video game, right? You don't have that. You are different, but you are powerful. You are creative. You are distinct. And that was just one of those fun, easy ways that the kids could help and better conceptualize with regards to God and realize that, man, he is this intelligent, creative, powerful, outside being of that, in fact, universe.
Now, the last question is whether the being that caused the universe is contingent or necessary. A contingent being is a being that could possibly not exist. Now, when we ask right. what things could possibly not exist in the universe, we have to say every single thing. And in fact, the universe itself, because the evidence shows there was a point when the universe did not exist. So all contingent beings in the universe require a cause external to them that is already in existence. And so they must be brought into existence by an already eternal, necessary, that means can't not exist, always existing being. This being is mm-hmm. self-existent. That is, this being's nature must be to exist. So this being does not have existence like the rest of us. So all humans mm-hmm. have existence. All things in the universe have existence. God just right. is existence. And in fact, it is his very nature or essence to exist. That's what we mean. He is being. And that's what we see in Exodus 3:14 when he says, I am. It is his very nature to exist. So it's nonsensical to ask who created God, since by definition, a self-existent necessary being does not have a cause. It is its very nature to exist. So this isn't a God of the gaps argument. We're not just filling in God when we don't have an explanation. We're saying the best explanation for the way reality is to posit this kind of being we call God, and specifically the theistic God. Now, it doesn't get us all the way to the Christian God. There's more evidence that can bring us there, but it does get us to the transcendent personal creator God of theism.
I love that. Now, you know, as we've gone through this conversation, we've already suggested a couple fun activities that you can incorporate as you're teaching these topics to your kiddos. But Tricia, you had a really cute conversation with your friend's 8-year-old granddaughter with regards to some of these complex issues. You might share in a little bit of that chat you had.
Yes. Dear friends of ours had a very astute 8-year-old grandchild, and she kept asking them, how do I know there's a God? Now, these mm-hmm. are very mature Christians and could have explained so much about God and who he is and evidence for his existence. But the question was, how do I know whether there's a God? So we just started off our talk. She said, would you talk with our granddaughter? I said, sure, I'd love that. Because if we can explain it to an 8-year-old, then we understand what we're arguing for pretty well. And the first thing I asked her, I said, maybe, what do you think? Could a cat have caused the universe? Now, even an 8-year-old recognizes that a cat couldn't have caused the universe. But I asked her, how come? Why is it that a cat couldn't have caused the universe? And she noticed that this cat is a thing inside the universe. And cats aren't that smart. And cats don't have that much power. And I just simply said, that's right. Like a brick in the wall of a house couldn't cause the whole house. So what would it take for something to cause a universe? And she even recognized that whatever caused everything in the universe couldn't be constrained by the physical laws of the universe or the physical characteristics of the universe. So it must be something outside of the universe. Now, just like if I saw a house that was made of Legos, I would know the Lego didn't cause the whole house.
Right.
In other words, whatever causes the Lego house couldn't be part of the Lego system. It couldn't be made out of what the Legos are made of. It had to be outside of the Lego house and not itself made of Legos. So since the world is made of space-time and physical stuff, whatever made the universe could not be made up of physical stuff. And that's what we call God.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that points out to the need for that creative interaction within creation itself. That, you know, so often we think of, oh, unintelligent matter just gradually came together with unintelligent matter and then created intelligent matter. Like when you understand it from this perspective, you realize, wait a second, that can't work.
Yeah.
So that's a bit like the example with the Lego box. You know, you've got all the pieces, the building blocks of life, just like a Lego kit has absolutely everything you would need, all the pieces, even the directions. But there's never going to be a point in time where you open up that box and everything is just already assembled, no matter how much you shake it, whatever other conditions you add to it. And so these are just great examples that you can use with your kids to help them understand, wow, it had to be this outside, necessary, immaterial, all creative being coming in and creating this universe. Now, there's a lot of little physical examples that we've kind of talked about that you can do with your kids. But what also is amazing is there is a great batch of video resources that are out and available. So one of the ones that I've used within my own house with my boys, they're called Dr. Craig videos. Just look them up on YouTube, Dr. Craig videos. They're about 5.5-6 minutes long, wonderfully animated, provide very accessible answers with regards to fine-tuning and the Kalam cosmological argument. It's an amazing way just to watch that with your kids. And there's also a newly released, as of now, a newly released documentary called Universe Designed that has some of the top minds, not only from cosmology, but also within apologetics, that's available for streaming as well. And the pictures of the universe are absolutely gorgeous. So I would definitely recommend, like if you've got middle school, even, you know, maybe some mature elementary school kids, because some of you got them in your house, the little young Sheldons, like that 8-year-old you were chatting with. This is a video that's visually beautiful and humbling, as some of the best minds coming together to show that the universe had to have been designed. So man, if you've got upper elementary, especially the middle school and high school range, like plunk down, stream that movie. It's a fantastic resource. But there's one more topic that you're probably going to want to be proficient on, and it's often a theme, especially in the latest Marvel movies. Trisha, what is the topic that we need to be chatting with, especially with our older kids?
Documentaries that talk about the multiverse. This comes up in the college class. This comes up in every average conversation, and it's posited as the solution to the problem. We don't need God because there are infinite multiverses. And Stephen Hawking talked a lot about this. First of all, you need to realize how speculative this is. They have moved beyond science. So whenever they're insisting that we as Christians stay within the realm of science and the natural world when we posit God, these speculative arguments also have exceeded the bounds of science. Even if there are multiverses that existed, even if our universe came from a multiverse, it doesn't explain the need for the ultimate cause. What caused the multiverses? And so it just kicks the ball down the road. It does not resolve the problem. We can also talk with our older teens about Lawrence Krauss. And you may want to show a little clip of the claim he makes about the universe causing nothing and just see how they respond. That might be very helpful just for them to have to figure out what kind of questions should I ask? And do you find his argument compelling that the universe was caused by nothing? So It gives you an opportunity to explain the meaning of equivocation and linguistic theft and how to avoid using a term in two different ways with two different meanings without clarifying that. And the word nothing means no thing, and it does not include energy fields. So that's just an extra added point regarding a discussion that is very popular and common today regarding multiverses and how we can respond to that with our kids too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a good point because when you think about it, multiverse theory brings in more questions than it actually answers. But yeah, it's a way of shifting the goalposts and being like, see, we found a solution. It's like, no, actually, now we need to account for why is there now multiverse and how is this even possible? So I love that. Excellent point to address.
Amy, one more thing. The other thing about multiverses that sometimes is positive is that it's an infinite number of multiverses.
Right.
The issue
an actual infinity.
Yes. While in set theory, we see infinities and we see in the eight that's lying on its side, there is not an infinite number of anything in the actual universe. That does not exist. And if you consider that, oh, well, there may be an infinite number of moments before we got to today. No, we would never have gotten to today if there were an infinite number of moments before today. So philosophically, an actual infinity is possible, and there is not an actual number of infinite things anywhere in the universe. And so if someone posits that it's infinite, again, remind them, you may make that claim, but philosophically and scientifically, it is not substantiated.
Absolutely. And if you are maybe more of a house where, you know, it's like, okay, we've got the videos, but what about maybe some resources? There is just an embarrassment of riches for resources out there with regards to kids, you know, well, gosh, even the middle schoolers. So God's Crime Scene is fantastic, especially middle school on up, very accessible. So that's by J. Werner Wallace. Yeah. But for the kids, So Cross-Examined Press has several resources available. So for the 6th to 8th grade range, Let's Get Real About Examining the Evidence for God is one resource that you can find. And for the 2nd to 5th grade range, there's a great resource called Yes, God is Real. Now we also, at the time of this filming, we've got Easter coming up. So another fantastic resource that I'm going to plug is Lee Strobel. He partnered with another author, Rob Suggs, in this one, Robert Elmer as well. And they just have all sorts of resources that are accessible for kids. And this one I use with my own kiddos. And it's A Case for the Creator. So all of the content that we've talked about and more in a kid accessible resource. So again, we'll have all of these in the show notes or on our Mama Bear resource page. So check that out for more resources. And gosh, we just thank you for joining us as we look at this amazing argument for the existence of God and encourage you to stay tuned because we've got more podcasts coming where we evaluate the evidence for the existence of God. And it's amazing. So thank you for joining us today. If you would like more information, go to mamabearapologetics.com. We've got blogs, podcasts, resources, request a speaker, all the things are available there. And if you ladies especially would like some online fellowship with other like-minded mamas, hop on to Mama Bear Apologetics because you'll be able to get connected with The Den, a private group where ladies can get together. And we just want to bless you in all ways possible. We've got a video series coming out, so you are going to want to get on that mailing list so you can see about all the resources that are coming out this year. So thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, hop over to mamabearapologetics.com where you can get more links to podcasts, blogs, and even request a speaker for your next women's event, family retreat, or your next church conference.
Mama Bear Apologetics is a listener-supported program, so if you really like what we're doing, please go over to our website, www.mamabearapologetics.com, and click donate.